Good afternoon. Welcome everyone to the Kaiser Family Foundation. My name is Jen Cates, and yes, I have lost my voice, but that doesn't matter because fortunately we're here today, you're here to talk with the newly appointed Executive Director of the Global Health Initiative, Lois Quam, and hear from her and she hear from you. So I'll try to minimize the amount of talking I do. But as everyone here probably knows, Lois was appointed as the first Executive Director of the GHI just 5 weeks ago today. And you have her bio in your packets, but if you look at it, you will see that she's accomplished many, many, many things in her career, both on the business and management side, as well as public service, including on healthcare reform. So an interesting time to be back in Washington. And she's already been incredibly busy in her new role, so we want to thank her for taking the time today to come here. And really, this is the first time that you'll be speaking as the executive director at a public event, so we're really thrilled that you were able to join us. So as you look at her bio, you'll probably notice that among the things, I want to point out one that I liked in particular, named by Fortune magazine as one of America's most powerful women. That's always a good, a wonderful thing to be able to say. But you'll also notice that in the many things there, there's not work on international health specifically. So one of the questions that I have, and I'm sure we all have, is what motivated Lois to take this position, and how is she planning on making that bridge? So first, before we get to that, for those who don't know Kaiser, just a little bit about us. We are a nonpartisan source of facts, information, analysis for policymakers, media, community, and our product is information. And one of the ways we provide it is through forums like this. So that's why we're really glad you're all here, full house. I think we have some overflow upstairs. The format will be I'll ask Lois a few questions, and then just spare my voice. We'll turn it over to you. But one of the things that she has asked me to convey, and I'm sure she will, is that she's 5 weeks into the job. So in addition to, that's not to say don't ask questions, but it's also to say that this is an opportunity to provide information coming both ways. And I think it would be really appreciated to hear from everybody who's speaking what your lessons are, your interests are, your concerns or questions might be, or from your program's experience. So let's think of it as a two-way conversation. I will also very much insist that everyone say who they are when they speak. So stopping there and starting with the first question, we'd love to hear from you about yourself, your background, and the motivation for coming to take on this challenge, but exciting one.
Well, thank you, Jen. It is terrific to be here at Kaiser today, and I'm very grateful for this opportunity to meet with each of you and to begin to hear from you at the beginning of my tenure at the State Department. Before I tell you a little bit about myself, I want to thank you in the room today and those of you on the webcast, because it is you that has built the support for global health year in and year out. You have been steadfast in this cause when it was politically popular and when it wasn't politically popular. And in that, you have built up the largest contribution on behalf of the United States to this space that we've ever seen. That has saved the lives of millions of people and protected your fellow citizens here in the U.S. at the same time. So I know in joining this space that I'm following in the footsteps of doctors and nurses and epidemiologists and development workers and others around the world who have made this happen year in and year out. And I accepted the secretary's request because I couldn't think of anything that could be more important to do than to work with you and others around the world to save lives. We can make a tremendous difference in this space, and with all that we've done, there is a tremendous unmet need. I also am somebody who really likes a challenge. I'm one of those people that someone says, well, that's really worthwhile, but it's too hard. That is a sign for me to want to work in that arena. I like challenges and accomplishing things that might have seemed that they were too hard to do. And throughout my life, whether it's been in religious organizations or in industry or in healthcare reform domestically or in other spheres, like raising three sons under two, that's what I've tried to do. And I'm a fighter. We have a cause here that's worth fighting for, and we're going to have to fight for it, fight for the resources, fight to overcome the challenges on the ground and in Washington and elsewhere to accomplish it. So thank you for the chance to work with all of you on this. That's why I took this assignment. I couldn't see anything more important to do ever, and I like the kind of challenges that it represents and have enjoyed working with others to accomplish great things in those kind of challenges in other spheres.
Thank you. Okay, well, one of the things that you had said to me when we spoke in advance that really stuck out was your desire to also take good creative ideas and make them stick and make them, you know, continue on. And if you could just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, as I said, my profession isn't medicine or epidemiology or development. What I feel my profession is how to take a good idea and bring it to scale and then sustain it as a legacy. So I really like the challenges of collaborating and working with people who look at problems in very different ways and finding ways that they can work together very effectively, because I've really found that if you can have different approaches to the same problem, you tend to end up with a more robust and sustainable solution. And the importance of this work is we never take on anything that's easy, ever. We aren't doing global health in countries and regions that are that everything is in place and working. So what I really enjoy doing is finding those ways to work. And, you know, I've done it in different parts of my career. I chaired the Healthcare Reform Commission in Minnesota back in the late 80s that developed our plan for universal coverage and shepherded that through the legislature twice. First was vetoed because it was too expensive, but the governor, same governor, signed a bill that was 10 times more expensive. I've done that work in working with religious organizations, particularly the Lutheran Church, in looking at how do you take a great history but prepare it for the future. I've done that kind of work in the area of Medicare and changing our healthcare system so that we can better adapt to the needs of an expanding senior population. So what's going to be especially important here today and for me in the future is to be able to listen to you and what you found works and what doesn't work and what you see as the biggest challenges or perhaps the neglected areas of focus, so that we can do the best job we can at any moment in time to make this stick and prevail into the future successfully.
Great. I have one more question and then we're going to get to everybody here. It's been 5 weeks. What have you done thus far, and what's your immediate next step to like learn about this? It must have been a whirlwind.
You know, I've done a lot of listening. I have been to been around the State Department, of course. I've been to USAID. I have been to PEPFAR. I have been to CDC, both in Washington and in Atlanta. I've done a lot of listening. I've done a tremendous amount of reading. And I've also really begun to work with my colleagues to gain momentum for the important things that we have underway in the countries where this work is happening. I'm looking forward to going to Africa for the first time next week. I'm very much looking forward to understanding how things are working in country. And I'm really looking forward to getting to rural areas in the country that we're working from. I'm from rural Minnesota, and so my sort of point of reference is, you know, sometimes you see how things really work or don't work when you get away from the capital city. It's always different. And so I'm going to try to take the time on my trips to get out of the capital cities and really see what's happening on the ground. I would say that I have been really struck by two things. One is just the immense dedication of people working in this field. You know, I knew that, but to be reminded of that every day is very striking. And the second, and I think this is part of our challenge, I have also been really struck since coming to Washington at the distance between Washington and what I've experienced as the mood in the rest of the country. I think we all know that there can be a beltway phenomenal around a capital city, but I think that it is both a challenge for us and an opportunity. The challenge is there is a really different feeling in the country outside of Washington. And for us to lead successfully on behalf of the causes that we care about, we have to, I think, understand that and be really relevant to what's happening in America outside Washington. The opportunity is, we know, and your research really, your survey research was very helpful in understanding, we know there is a huge support for the work of global health in the country, in this country, across this country, throughout all communities and in all walks of life. People have given generously to the cause of global health for generations in so many areas. We need to really tap into that and to make their care and concern effective as we do our work here in Washington, as we do our work in the field. And I think there's a huge opportunity to do that.
Thanks. And I'm going to turn over to everyone here, especially since my voice is really going. We're going to take three questions or comments at a time. And please, when you have the mic, just say who you are and where you're from. That will really help Lois in learning who's here. And okay, so.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for being with us today, and congratulations on the new position. My name is Chris Collins. I'm with AMFAR. And, you know, I'm not sure, and I may have mentioned it, missed it, but I, looking at the new GHI strategy, which I believe is out today, I don't believe the words human rights are in that document. And I know Secretary Clinton has been a real leader on talking about the connection between health and human rights and the need to have both. You know, in thinking about populations like gay men and other men who have sex with men, injection drug users, sex workers, other people who are marginalized in their communities, but also sometimes bear the biggest brunt of healthcare challenges and where the most is needed to help the healthcare system reach them. I wonder if you could talk about your commitment and the commitment of GHI to on those human rights issues as they affect getting healthcare to marginalized populations, but also if you could comment then also on this, you know, I noted that country ownership, for example, in the new GHI strategy has moved up now in terms of your principles. It's obviously a cornerstone of GHI. And, you know, we know that, for example, women aren't equal in so many of the countries we're helping. We know that gay behavior is illegal, and sometimes there's a death sentence for practicing it in many of the countries that have big MSM epidemics. So as we move to country ownership, how are we going to walk that line of making sure that we don't forget about marginalized folks? Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you very much for your question. And first of all, I want to really thank you and to all the people here and on the webcast, because the advocacy community around HIV and AIDS has made such a remarkable achievement on behalf of all of us in this country and around the world. When we think about the incredible accomplishments in prevention, in treatment, in care, and the relative speed, not fast enough, but that has occurred, it's a remarkable leadership, and the tremendous funds in this area and activities around PEPFAR are, of course, as a result of that advocacy and the insight of the Bush administration and others in getting it there. So you raise an important question, and it was an issue that I discussed on, I think it was my fourth day on the job when I was at CDC with colleagues there, which is, you know, how do we handle this tension between country ownership and human rights, whether it pertains to disadvantaged, discriminated populations inside a country or refugee populations that are in a country. And I'd like to just say a couple things. The first is that we are implementing the Secretary's vision around human rights and human rights as it pertains to health. And therefore, we have an enormous commitment to the human rights of minority groups within countries and disadvantaged groups within countries. And we understand that that creates a challenge around the principle of country ownership. So we, as we work towards country ownership, that is a constant consideration. We have an interest in country ownership because we want to see countries contributing their own resources towards the treatment, care, and prevention of HIV and AIDS, towards maternal and child health and other areas. And we want that because that brings greater resources to the table and because it can build a more sustainable way of providing global health services. But in doing so, we're very conscious of this challenge and understand that we have to, with you, work our way through judgments related to this challenge over time. And it is a challenge. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Ms. Kwan, my name is Lois Pace. I'm with Livestrong, or the Lance Armstrong Foundation. I want to thank you, first of all, for your work with Ovations, and in particular, the work that they've done globally to support Centers of Excellence for Chronic Disease. So thanks very much for that, and thanks very much for being here today. I'm here because, or my question is around how we are advising countries around this sort of emerging global health problem, in particular cancer and other non-communicable diseases. So there's a high-level meeting coming up this September at the UN that will address this, and member states will be asked to make pretty serious commitments around NCDs in addition to all of the other work that needs to be done in global health. So how might you advise these countries to approach this priority and maybe even leverage GHI as a resource to help really address this problem alongside the other global health priorities that we have in front of us? Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. You referenced the work I did in global health when I was in industry, and I led the development there of a series of 13 centers of excellence around the world in chronic illness as a part of the Clinton Global Initiative, and that's successfully underway. Part of what is at the foundation of the Global Health Initiative is the recognition that we all do better, whatever the challenge is, if we can have an integrated and sustainable healthcare system. That if we look at the perspective of a family where one family member has one illness and one another, that if countries have an integrated, sustainable healthcare system that can respond to a full variety of healthcare challenges, that it serves us all most effectively. Now, we know we're quite at a distance from that, but the experience of chronic illness underscores that, and we know that chronic disease is advancing in all countries of the world. So while our focus in GHI has been in many ways not targeted at chronic illness, the focus of activities to build more integrated and sustainable healthcare systems that can meet the need of a full population helps prepare countries in many ways for the challenges of preventing and treating and caring for people with chronic illness. You had asked me to hear three questions before
totally
I answered, and I realized I'm kind of jumping in.
Whatever you prefer.
So maybe we could get through more questions, though, if I group them. So
okay.
I will now begin
grouping.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Maurice Middleberg. I'm with IntraHealth International. Congratulations on your appointment as executive director. I actually want to pick up on your comments with regard to sustainable health systems with a specific request that you encourage your colleagues to develop a health workforce strategy under the GHI. In contrast to some of the other dimensions of the GHI, in all candor, the approach to it is quite vague without specific objectives or resource allocations or priority countries or technical approach. And if, in fact, there are to be sustainable systems, we really have to address the health workforce issue. And while there's a lot of activity going on, it's not guided by any articulated strategy. And so moving forward on developing such a strategy would be a very, very useful step that you might encourage.
Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on your new appointment. My name is Doyle Wally. I'm from Africa's Health in 2010. First, I'd like to thank the Kaiser Family Foundation for the analysis of the FY10 GHI resources that came out, you know, recently. It's obvious from the analysis that one of the core principles of GHI, which is women, girls, and gender equality, is actually not as well funded as we would expect. And my question is, this is a big issue in developing countries as women are dying, children are dying. What are your plans to try and reduce the skewed funding that we have right now in the GHI so that we can better address women and girls' health? Thank you.
Hello. Thanks for standing forward in public fora, and congratulations on your position. I'm Gary Merritt, USAID retiree and self-employed consultant now. I was privileged to be working several months in Liberia last year and to program perhaps the first direct host government funding in the health sector, as it turned out. Wanted to ask a possibly impolitic, difficult question to answer, but that is, given the global financing crisis with respect to overseas assistance, and given the president's accent on direct host government grant funding as opposed to contract grantee intermediation, the combination of those two things is going to put a squeeze, I would guess, on funding in the next few years for the now conventional contractor grantee system that evolved within USAID in the health sector in particular. How do you see that playing out over the next year or so? I should think it's going to be especially tough if the president's accent on host government financing and cutbacks in foreign aid happen at the same time.
Thank you. Thanks to each of you. I appreciate the comment on workforce, and we've taken note of that. Thank you very much for your comment and your question regarding services to women and girls. As you know, Secretary Clinton has strongly prioritized this area. And one of the first things I did in coming to the State Department was meet with Ambassador Verveer, who heads the Women's Office at State Department. I'm also really pleased that Dan Singer is here from NIH, who heads the Maternal and Child Disease Department. We have enormous work to do at every level. As you know, we lose hundreds and thousands of women each year in childbirth, in every case preventable. We do not provide the kind of care throughout women's lifetime that are required for women to reach their full potential. It is an area that we will and I will focus on very heavily. It is an area where we can make very significant strides, and I assure you the Secretary of State is keenly interested in doing so. So thank you very much. You raise a really important question that gets at the underlying resources that will be available for global health. You know, I feel very proud to work for a president, President Obama, who in a difficult budget year where lots of things were flat or even worthwhile things saw a reduction, that we saw a very solid increase in support for global health and financial support for global health. That is impressive. We now, it's important, and I go back to this sort of noticeable difference between how where the country is on things and what you hear about in Washington. I think there is very strong support in the country for global health. When you look at the ways that people have given of their own resources to non-governmental organizations, nonprofits, for many, many years, to religious organizations doing this work. And, you know, I remember my own family growing up that I grew up in an agricultural area in Minnesota, so, you know, depending on the price of corn, the fortunes of families varied a lot. But there was a lot of discussion. I remember being at the kitchen table where my my cousin Helen and Orville was saying that no matter what happened year in and year out, we had to support Lutheran World Relief, because the work that Lutheran World Relief, and I know they're just one of many organizations that do this kind of work, made such a difference. And I think that we all know, any one of us could be in this position where we relied on the work and support that this country and the generous people of this country give and provide. So it is a crucial moment to take the support that exists for global health and make it visible and relevant, and to support these efforts going forward. And I'm really proud of what the president has put forward in the budget in this regard.
Two things really quickly. The analysis of the budget that was mentioned is in your packet, so if anyone is interested in seeing that, it's here. And then secondly, you mentioned a couple times some of the poll findings, and there's some interesting findings in a poll, our most recent poll on U.S. public opinion about global health. One is the usual disconnect between what we spend on foreign aid and what the U.S. public thinks we spend on foreign aid. But more, I think, interesting and challenging than that is that I think there's a disconnect, the findings seem to suggest this, between what people see as foreign aid and what they understand as what we do on global health. Because the more specific you get in terms of framing findings, the more support there seems to be. So it's not clear that it's resonating with the public what all of the work in Washington really translates as.
Very striking.
Okay, our next three questions. And we'll make sure to get to the back, because we also saw some folks back there. Yeah, here and there and there. Okay. And then in the way back after that.
Hi, my name is Darpita Purohit, and I'm a student of the Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much for coming. My question is, do you think how effectively is the GHI being used as a public diplomacy tool? And in your experience, have you come across anything that basically showed that, the Global Health Initiative is helping the U.S. build a positive image in the developing countries?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming. I'm Amy Johnson. I'm with Peace Corps. And just a small plug, thank you very much for doing this on Peace Corps' 50th anniversary. We're one of the agencies that cooperates with State Department and with USAID on almost every spectrum that's covered under GHI. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you see the whole of government approach applying here for organizations that are not directly included in GHI, but that have strong links. And I would, on behalf of my colleagues, I work in the Inter-America and Pacific region, so we have Guatemala as one of the GHI plus countries, and then five others in Africa. We would welcome you at any time in your travels to visit with our offices and understand a little bit more about what we're doing on the ground.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Sutton. I work with the Global Health Council. Thank you for being here today. I have a rather specific question, so bear with me for just a second. I was doing a brief comparison between the consultation document that was released last year and the recently released strategy document, and I noticed one language change around the principle that relates to women and girls. The consultation document mentioned something more closely aligned with implementing a women and girls-centered approach. And the strategy document seems to shift that language to a focus on women, girls, and gender equality. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to the thinking behind that change, and if you think it will influence implementation of the GHI around women and girls.
Thanks to each of you. Thank you very much for your question, and I hope you and your colleagues at Johns Hopkins will always study this and give us good feedback. The Secretary has been very articulate in the opportunity for the United States to engage in smarter and more effective ways around the world through using our diplomatic and development capacity as well as our capacity around defense. And that is so real in healthcare. We have such enormously talented people in this country, in the university sector, in the nonprofits, in industry, across government, and it is such a powerful way to demonstrate the goodwill and capacity of the American people around the world, and to do that in a way that helps every citizen of the world reach their full potential. And we have a long ways to go to realize that. So this is at the heart of the work around diplomacy and development, and that is a work that will be ongoing throughout the world and over time. The second questioner, Peace Corps. I was at the Peace Corps my first week and met with your deputy director, and I think two things are really exciting. First of all, it is just smart to use this whole of government approach, and to rather than everybody working independently, to be able to take the different perspectives and strengths of different agencies and combine them around confronting these enormous challenges. Peace Corps brings incredible energy and also brings a presence in places where they are the only U.S. government agency engaged. And in the end, it is really important that we're able to translate the enormous benefits of health to remote rural areas around the world. And the Peace Corps provides an really interesting way to think about how we can do that more effectively. So congratulations on the anniversary. The next 50 years are the best is yet to come, right? And then thank you for your question related to the document on and the question about the language. I wasn't here, of course, when the first document was developed, but I can speak very clearly about our commitment with regard to women and girls. And if you look at Secretary Clinton's incredible commitment in this area and her focus, her creation of Ambassador Verveer's office, the work that we have underway, it's immense. And we're able to, in this work, build on the work that's been done before. I'm really pleased that Rear Admiral Blumenthal's here, who set up the Women's Office at the Department of Health and Human Services. There is only an intensification of our commitment to do this work as we move forward in GHI.
Just one thing related to that. We recently had a forum here on the principle, Women, Girls, and Gender Equality Principle, and this with several representatives from the Interagency Task Force looking at this. This issue came up about the language change, and one of the things that got discussed by the many people there was the challenge of not making this just about women as beneficiaries, but also as women as actively engaged in programs and development of policy and approach. So that was one of the things that seemed to shift a little bit with the language. Or purpose for shifting the language that was stated. Okay, and we want to make sure to go to the back because I don't want to forget about people on the way back who've been raising their hands. Owen.
Hi, I'm Owen Ryan from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I just wanted to ask, in addition to the coordination that you see yourself doing within the government, I'm wondering what your perspective is on coordination with large multilateral groups like the Global Fund and Gavi. Thanks.
Okay. Two more. Lisa.
Thank you. I'm Lisa Carty from CSIS, and I wanted to pose a slightly different question. I'm wondering if we could get you to reflect a little bit on your past experience, particularly in the context of people often referencing the importance of bringing private sector principles to public sector work. But I don't think we ever really very well define what we mean by that. So I know it's only been 5 weeks, but I'm just curious if in these first 5 weeks you've already seen things, either in how within the GHI people have defined the problems or defined the solutions, that as you think about it from a private sector perspective, you maybe see it in a little bit of a different way. Thank you.
And then Ron, I thought you had, are you? No, okay.
Hi, my name is Nora Schauble. I'm here with World Learning. I actually just started there as an intern, and I'm a recent graduate of American University, studying international development and global health. And one of the things we often talked about in school in some of my global health classes was about tendencies to focus on disease-focused programs rather than system improvements. It was a topic that was touched on earlier. But I was wondering if you have anything to say about programs focused on diseases, as is mentioned in the budget, such as malaria and HIV, and other programs that are more focused on capacity development for the country in terms of long care, health systems development, integrated for the whole family, as you said, or the whole individual, maybe not just HIV, but every other condition the person might be concerned with.
First of all, thank you very much for the Gates Foundation's leadership in so many areas. It's about getting the job done. And getting the job done, it's very important to work with partners around the world, whether they be civil society or multilateral organizations or other governments. So the work with Gavi, the work with the Global Fund is very important to our ability to confront and succeed against these challenges. And we look forward to doing that and continually to find better ways to do that. Your question about my experiences, I guess what I've found in every sector that I've worked in is that in the end the most important thing is to be able to keep a strong focus on the goal that you're trying to achieve and to be able to learn. That whatever I've learned, whatever you plan and however long you think about a challenge or a problem and you think you've planned and designed and have it all laid out, it will not go according to plan. I think we know that, and I think it's so true. And that what is important is to keep your eye focused on the goal and be ready to learn and adapt in order to achieve that goal. And to resist being distracted by internal matters or other kinds of things that in the end aren't on that important pathway to get to a goal. And my experience in industry really brought that home to me. And I think that we face that here. What we're trying to do is very challenging. We are trying to reverse not just decades, but centuries-long obstacles. And I'm so hopeful because we have so many wonderful tools now to confront these challenges and very dedicated people. And I think for us to be successful, we're going to have to focus really resolutely on the goals that we're trying to achieve. And we're going to need to listen, learn, confront at times what have been our beliefs on how something's going to be most successful because we learn that there are other paths that we've learned from others or we've learned on the ground that can get there more effectively and adapt in order to do that. Your question about you know, the disease-focused approach or the capacity approach, I think they work in concert. It is crystal clear to me that we would have not made the strides that we've made in HIV and AIDS or in other areas had we not focused on making strides and achieving results in that arena. It's also clear to me that we need to build the capacity so that we can sustain the results that we've achieved in individual disease areas and that we can achieve greater things. As the Secretary said in her speech in August, it is a tragedy to save a woman's life, a woman who's has HIV or AIDS, and then to see her die in childbirth. You can imagine the tragedy for a parent in having one child that lines up with one of the programs we've got in the area and having another child whose medical needs don't have anywhere to go. So I don't think these approaches are in conflict. I think they work in concert, and that it is important that we focus in both areas and that we work to move forward and make achievement in them.
David Oot from Save the Children, and thank you for joining us today. One comment and a question. The comment is we haven't mentioned under 5 mortality in the newborn, and given that there are something over 8 million kids who still die each year, most of whom die of preventable causes, 40% of whom die in the first month of life, I would hope that we would continue to maintain an important focus on that in the work that we do. And the second is an unrelated question. I'm not sure if you've been up to the Hill yet, but you'll be going up to the Hill probably often. And I'm just wondering what's the toughest question or questions you've been asked or what you expect to be asked when you make those visits?
Porter, did you?
Hi, Porter McConnell from Oxfam. Just following up on Chris's excellent question earlier, I wanted to read a quick quote from a Ugandan doctor and researcher, Freddy Zengoba, who said, citizens need to be able to hold their governments accountable. And when donors bypass ministries of health and set up parallel health programs, citizens give the credit or the blame to donors, not to their own government. So I guess my question for you is, in the country strategies that are coming out soon, how do you view the U.S. role in sort of reinforcing that relationship between citizens and their governments and making sure that we don't, you know, that we do no harm and that we're able to sort of, through our health programming, kind of build that link and make sure we're taking care of marginalized populations? Thank you.
I'm Nancy Touchette from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at NIH. And as we confront many of the challenges in dealing with global health, we're going to need a very hefty toolbox in ensuring that new discoveries are kept online, that new drugs are developed, vaccines, and that work in the field. And what sort of mechanism do you envision for ensuring that we make sure these discoveries are kept going and make it into the global health strategy?
Thank you very much. First of all, thank you so much to Save the Children. One of the things that I learned when I was talking with some of my colleagues at USAID was the just incredible lack of progress we've made in saving the lives of children in their first month of life, that we have not made the strides there that we need to make. And I think that really, really relates to this question of how do we build integrated, sustainable healthcare delivery systems in countries that can confront the whole range of challenges that we face. So we're very, very conscious of that. I do expect to get a lot of questions on the Hill. I really am looking forward to spending a lot of time on the Hill. I think that it is very important that members of Congress and their staff have a full and deep and rich understanding of the enormous leadership the United States brings in global health around the world, the enormous accomplishments that we've made, yet the very significant work that remains. And I'll look forward to talking about the ways we can improve the effectiveness and the efficiency of what we do, and that as we do that, we will save more lives and do even more to make our own citizens and our own country more secure. The second questioner was?
I think it was vaccines.
Or
the toolbox.
The toolbox. There's one between, who asked the second question? Sorry. Your question. Okay, got it. As I was visiting with my colleagues at CDC, we had really good discussions about, you know, how do you build capacities in ministries of health? And CDC has done tremendous work over a long period of time in helping to train epidemiologists that worked in country. I had a virtual visit to Kenya, and I'm looking forward to going there in person, of course, where I was on video conference with Kenyan epidemiologists who had been trained by CDC programs. And that's an example of building capacity in country that's powerfully important for that country, but by the way, also protects this country from the spread of epidemic disease, which, you know, knows no borders. So thank you for your question. And on research, there is a part of GHI that Dr. Francis Collins from the NIH chairs that looks at the research agenda to expand the toolkit for the treatment and care and prevention of disease globally. We need to both make sure we are getting into practice effectively what we already know, because far too many people lose their lives around the world for causes that are utterly preventable that we know how to treat, but the services are not available or not provided effectively. At the same time, we need to find ways to invent new tools and characteristics. And I'm really tremendously pleased that there is such a strong interest from the NIH in doing this work with us on global health.
Okay, let's take three more questions. We may only have time for three more. We'll see how long you speak for. One here, there's one way back there, and then back there.
Thanks for being with us today. My name is Elizabeth Leonard. I work at CARE, and I'm a student at the George Washington University. I wanted to ask you about the continuing resolution that was passed in the House. There was a lot of attacks that we saw on international family planning funding, and I'd like to know what your approach will be to protecting the efforts of organizations that are out there trying to satisfy the unmet need for family planning. Thanks.
Yeah, my name is Phil Castle. I'm from the American Society for Clinical Pathology. I used to work at NIH, and I've sort of watched the toolbox development. One of the critical gaps, in my opinion, is that there's the development of the technology, but there's a lack of translation of that technology into robust tools that would go into low-resource settings. And part of the problem is that these tools get handed off to companies. And the companies have a bottom line. They have to stay in the black. There's just they have to have that economic incentive. So what are we going to do to step into the middle of that and help those technologies? You have to lower the cost of the making of the technology. So we need the companies. I mean, my public health buddies will say, ooh, it's the dark side. But the truth is, without them, we get no tools. And so where are we going to step in to really make the tools available? In the world of vaccines, we have a Gavi. But a lot of things are not solvable by vaccines. So in the world of diagnostics, there is no Gavi-like entity that would help develop, validate, and make available robust tools for developing the developing world.
There's somebody over here too. Were you? You can have the last. We might have time for one more, but yeah. One sec.
I'm Susan Blumenthal from AMFAR and a former U.S. Assistant Surgeon General. Lois, welcome. Congratulations. You know, we're all delighted to work with you. As a business leader, technology has permeated almost everything we do, from businesses to shopping to, but health is one of the last sectors that it has permeated in our country and around the world. In many places in the developing world, the technology that's needed is education and immunizations and medications. But nonetheless, how can we speed that science to service gap that we heard about, that 17-year science to service gap, from new discoveries to the developing world using the tools of technology? And how might the GHI incorporate that?
Well, thank you for each of these questions. And Jen, I hope you'll host me here again sometime, because sure, these are excellent comments, and I'd really be delighted for that. First of all, CARE, I made my first contribution to Global Health to CARE when I was in sixth grade. You had these great programs in place that really, I remember, great deal of pride. Family planning services are very important to us. Secretary Clinton has been very clear about that. My colleagues at USAID have done tremendous work on that over time. And we are very conscious of the tremendous need for family planning services around the world. And we'll be working very hard to expand family planning services and increase their effectiveness around the world. So thank you very much for your comment. Your question, these two questions really went together, the second and third question, which is, you know, how do we take our knowledge and how do we translate it into the field in ways that are most efficient, that are most affordable, that are most powerful in the setting? And we haven't always been good at that. We have such a huge gap between what we know and what happens on the ground consistently. So when I think about our challenge in GHI, so much of it is about improving the effectiveness and efficiency by which we deliver our knowledge, our capacity, our resources around the world so that we can save more lives, we can reduce the immense suffering and burden of illness, and we can protect our country at the same time. Public-private partnerships are going to be critical to that, because that's a way that we can bring together the knowledge that's represented in a variety of sectors to do that more effectively. I think working across the whole of government is critical to that, because we find different knowledge embedded in different places. Being nimble and adaptive as we learn, following where the data leads us, as we're working in countries to understand what works and what doesn't, even if it's different than what we had thought was going to happen, all those things are going to be important to achieving both the combinations of real breakthroughs, but also a lot of progress is going to be made by just steady, persistent, adaptive effort. I am really determined to, with you, fight for these results and for support in the Congress and in the country to make this happen. We have made enormous strides in the last 10 years. From the incredible work that PEPFAR represented as a bipartisan approach to take on the scourge of our age and to prevent and treat and care for individuals with HIV, to the long-standing work that has been done in the development community and in the federal government at USAID to improve the lives of millions of people around the world. And in the way that the Centers for Disease Control is the cornerstone of public health and protects us in this country and others around the world from the spread of epidemic disease, But we have only begun to confront the challenges, and we know there are going to be new challenges. So we're going to need to listen and learn and work together and work very hard and in a dedicated way with a very strong focus on our goals to get there. And thank you very much, Jen, for having us here today.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to coming back.
Thank you so much. Please join me in thanking Lewis. It's very clear that you've been very busy for the last 5 weeks with the amount of information that you already have gathered. And so we'd be happy to host any time. In particular, a year from now, it would be great to come back and see where we are. But thank you so much for taking time. Please join me one more time to thank Lewis Quam for being here.